We've taken time this year to look at our church through different lens. We've looked at our church through the lens of mission, of what inclusiveness means, of human sexuality issues, all of it in an effort to understand who we are as Bethany United Methodist Church right now at this point in the time of our life. And so today I want to add another lens, and that is the lens of generations. There are six living generations in America, and we are six fairly distinct groups of people. And speaking very generally, each generation has their own likes, their dislikes, and their attributes. All six generations have shared experiences and ideas and values. For example, all generations value hard work, but the work ethic of each generation may be expressed differently. So this morning, I speak about generations in very general terms. My information comes from the U.S. Census, from Pew Research, from Time Magazine, various books, and multiple websites. But most of all, I want us to remember the value of an individual. I'm not trying to put any person into a box or any generation in a box. I'm trying to draw together what we have in common, our similarities, as well as our differences, so that we can learn more about one another, so that together we can be disciples of Jesus Christ in any age. And you may find that your own personal, basic values and beliefs and needs fit very nicely with your generation. And you may also find that your values and beliefs and needs are more in line with another generation, or even several generations. So I want to take time this morning and talk about each one of them briefly. This is going to be a longer message than usual. Take notes as you want to. The first generation is, we've often called it the greatest generation, right? G.I. Joe generation is another form. The G.I. generation, which can mean government issue or general issue. We know it was Tom Brokaw who sort of coined that phrase or helped to make it popular in his book on the greatest generation. These were the children of World War I generation. They were the fighters in World War II. They were the survivors of the Depression and of the Dust Bowl. They saved the world. And then they built the first phase of the nation and the society that we enjoy today. This is the only generation that can remember life without aviation, without electricity, refrigerators, radio, and TV. This generation avoids debt at any cost. Pardon the pun. They save and they buy with cash, or they barter, or they do without. They have a strong sense of personal duty, which means duty to family, and it means that they vote. They support war efforts. They volunteer. They have a strong sense of social loyalty to jobs, to groups, to schools, to churches, to community organizations. They have a strong emphasis on personal morality. Personal morality and personal reputation in the community is paramount for the greatest generation. They are the group that has near absolute standards of morality. Good and bad, right and wrong, fair and unfair. And they're mostly driven by that moral and that community reputation, a will to survive, by hard work, by being resourceful. The youngest and the greatest generation are now 95 years old. This is a generation that had no concept of retirement. Okay? You worked until you died or you couldn't work anymore. Now, according to my information, we have four members from the greatest generation on our membership roll. None on the baptized roll. And their influence lives on. It's about 2 million Americans today in a field of 347 million. That's the greatest generation. Here's the second one. The builder's generation. Also known as the can-do generation, the get-it-done generation. They've often been called the mature generation, as well as the silent generation. These are folks born between 1925 and 1945. If you're part of the mature generation, would you stand? If you were born between 1925 and 1945? That's a sort of come to Jesus moment, isn't it? Yeah. Thank you. This generation is known as the builders, as the matures, as the silent. In 1951, a Time magazine article reflected on the children of this generation, and they described them as invisible, withdrawn, cautious, submissive but respectful to authority, and very industrious. That article was the first to use the term silent generation, and the term stuck. It was a time when children were to be seen and not heard. Children were dressed as little adults. There wasn't such a thing as children's clothes and youth clothes and adult clothes. Children were simply dressed as little adults, and that's what they looked like. And the way to survive personally and economically for this generation was to keep your head down, have a strong work ethic, bow to authority, know your place and your role, and work quietly and consistently to achieve your goals and to sustain your living conditions. For this generation, work, they took what work was available and they were grateful when they got it. They saw work as a privilege, not as an entitlement. The youngest served in World War II, the oldest served in Korea. Everyone was impacted by the Cold War. And in terms of leadership style, this generation favors top-down, authoritative male leadership almost exclusively. And that's where we get terms like chairman and president and CEO and foreman. And even a few terms that we consider crude and offensive today, like boss man. Questioning authority to the builders was a waste of time. If you want to change things, you done it from within the system or through the system. Anything else was considered pure rebellion. They were mostly driven by hard work, job titles, salary, and then later benefits, and providing for their families. That's what drove them. They took from the previous generation that sense of strong personal morality, strong community reputation as well, and they were determined. The oldest of the builders are now 94, and the youngest are 74. Today, 1 in 8 people in America is 65 and older. This is the first generation to do retirement. This is the first generation to have fun on a large scale, and so the national parks were formed, and travel things were established, and destinations cropped up from this with this generation. 75% of our nation's wealth is in the hands of builders. And like their parents, builders vote, they volunteer, they have value, that value of loyalty to community organizations like the church. So, with the natural attrition of builders, so goes the dwindling numbers, which is a key to why we're seeing lower membership in churches, in clubs, in community organizations. When I thought about what it's hard to tolerate for builders, it's hard for builders to tolerate falseness, laziness, rebellion, disturbance, breaking with tradition, breaking the status quo. According to my information, on the Bethany membership roll, we have 148 builders. That's roughly 23% of our membership roll. And none on the baptized roll. And they make up 24% of the U.S. population. The third generation are the baby boomers, also known as the me generation. If you were born between 1946 and 1964, please stand. If you were born between 1946 and 64, please stand. Thank you. This generation was defined by events like the Vietnam War, the Cold War, women's liberation movement, civil rights movement, and space exploration. Education is very important to this generation. Boomers believe in working long hours. Boomers essentially created corporate America and the culture of face-to-face meetings in the workplace. And this generation's idea of success includes not just the acquisition of wealth, but also emotional and psychological happiness and contentment. This generation believes in themselves, and they tend to be activists for themselves and for others. And because they evaluate issues by considering how the outcome affects not only me and my family, but others, they've often been characterized as the me generation. Boomers were and still are at the forefront of many civil rights and human rights legislation and issues. It's 23% of the American population are boomers. That's about 72.5 million people. And when it comes to church, boomers borrow some from the previous generation, but they also are a mix of styles and a mix of formats and a more celebrative worship than worship previously. This is the first generation to view spiritual and moral and ethical truth as relative, as situational, rather than standard or near absolute. They prefer a hands-on approach to ministry and mission rather than meetings. And for boomers, they want to see a church that has a careful balance between being inwardly focused, again, ministries for me and my family, as well as a balance for being outwardly focused, making an impact in your community, in your nation, and in your world. And they favor dialogue in small groups as opposed to the teacher classroom format that their parents grew up with. This is probably one of the most important things about baby boomers. It is a common generational trait for boomers to challenge the established institutions and the faith teachings. Their leadership style, they favor top-down as well as team leadership, but they don't select leaders by the title they have, but more so by personal qualities. Are they authentic? Are they genuine? Are they knowledgeable? Are they trusted? Are they motivational? It's a significant way that the boomer generation selects leaders and votes for leaders as opposed to the previous generation of the builders. Boomers are now reaching retirement age. This generation spends $180 billion every year on travel. That's according to the website Scrift. Boomers also hold 80% of all the money in savings and loan institutions. 80%. Boomers are going to influence the spending and the marketing of products and investment economy in our nation for years to come. And they are mostly driven by hard work, by ambition. They're goal-driven through promotions, through increased responsibility, and by recognition. It's hard for boomers to tolerate inauthentic leadership. Hard for them to tolerate a lack of options. A lack of what we'll call the multis. Multicultural, multimedia, multiracial. Very hard for them to tolerate people who talk the talk but don't walk the walk. And there's this trait of challenging the status quo and institutions that's just inherent in baby boomers. According to my information, 211 members here at Bethany would be defined as baby boomers. 211. That's 34%. That's roughly one out of every three members at Bethany is a baby boomer. And we have none on the baptized roll. Here's the next one, Gen X, Generation X. If you were born between 1965 and 1980, would you stand? If you were born between 1965 and 1980, also known as Gen X, also known as the sandwich generation, because they are right in the middle of two prominent generations, the baby boomers and the millennials. And research suggests that this is the era where the latchkey label came from, the latchkey kid label. The term refers to a child who is at home without adult supervision for some part of the day, especially after school, until a parent returns from work. And what that has done is really enhanced their level of confidence. And it's allowed them to be more secure and independent. It's a big reason why Generation X is the most entrepreneurial generation in American history. And whereas builders and boomers might be more defined as workaholics, Xers are proving generally to be more focused on having a proper work-life balance. Maybe they saw what it did to their parents and their grandparents. I don't know. But one thing that's coming through in the research with Gen X is that this generation tends to be more cynical and more pessimistic of institutions and people than any other, even more than the boomers. And for Gen X, leadership style should be as broad as possible. Should include as many people as possible. Gone are the days for Gen X. Gone are the days of one person, male-dominated, top-down, authoritative leadership style. That's gone. And they're motivated by doing their own thing, by appreciating flexible work schedules and monetary rewards. But that cynicism and that pessimism can also propel them to work for change, to work for human rights. I mean, hey, they're the children of the boomers. What do you expect, right? Xers have the most disposable income of any generation in America. That means they have money available for cars, homes, disposable income. They just passed the boomers as having the most. And they value self-reliance and confidence in themselves. Research suggests that Xers are interested in a faith and a church that equips them with present-day life skills and building healthy relationships, qualities, again, that boost self-confidence and family. So it may be that with Gen Xers, topics like parenting in a class or how to handle disappointment are simply going to be more appealing to an Xer than a class on the Apostles' Creed or a book of the Bible, because what's important is how it is applicable to daily life and how it connects deeply spiritually with them. More than one worship option, both in time and style, doesn't hurt either. It's hard for Xers to tolerate irrelevant teaching, stale programming, anything that exudes a "we've always done it this way" approach. Very hard for Gen Xers to tolerate the prejudices and the stereotypes handed down from previous generations historically, so that very often they simply don't accept those prejudices and those stereotypes. And they're cautious about anything that hinders them from their generational value of doing their own thing and being self-reliant and carving out their own world. 65 million Americans are Gen Xers. And according to my information, approximately 125 of our members on roll come from Generation X. That's about 20%. That's about one in every five members are from Gen X. And we have three people on the baptized roll. The next one is Generation Y, or the millennial generation. If you were born between 1981 and 1996, would you please stand? If you're a millennial, between 1981 and 1996. Okay. We have three here this morning, I think. Maybe a few more. Thank you. We had some at 8:30 this morning as well. This is also known as the Bridger generation because they are showing a serious willingness to expand the previous boundaries of American society politically, economically, socially. Because what boomers began, millennials want to complete. They are shaped by the Iraq War, by war against terrorism, by the economic crisis. Millennials are what we call digital natives, okay? That means that they were born or grew up entirely in an age of technological innovation. It is not new to them. It is part of the air they breathe. 25% of all Americans are millennials. They represent 35% of the workforce in America today. Their lives are defined primarily by relationships and family and technology. And millennials simply don't understand why technology is resisted. They see it as an exciting frontier, much like the builders and the baby boomers saw space travel as an exciting frontier. I mean, for them, it would be like, for a millennial, it would be like asking a baby boomer to live without a car when you grew up with cars and cars were everywhere. And millennials have been described as pleasant, as community-oriented, as forward-thinking. They are extremely smart, in part due to immediate access to information and resources, not just on a national scale, but on a global scale. And they have an appreciation for the contributions of previous generations, but they do not feel the need to adopt those values or perpetuate the view of their world in order to live their lives. See, for millennials, appreciation does not mean perpetuation. And that is significant for the life of the church. Make perpetuation a mandatory thing, and as a generation, in very general, broad terms, millennials are gone. They're gone, or at least research shows that to be it so far. Very important to millennials is an unconditional acceptance of people from every segment of society. So they've often been called the Mosaic generation. Millennials are the most ethnically diverse generation in American history. And inherent diversity leads to tolerance. They are less cynical, they are less pessimistic than previous generations. They're turned off at discrimination based on history or the experiences of previous generations. Millennials understand that unity is not easy, but that it's very important. They're motivated by stability, by structure, by teamwork, by being invited into conversations around decision making. Millennials right now are changing corporate America. They prefer collaboration and accommodation to meet goals. And millennials have been described as fearless, independent, serious, stressed, and eager to learn. Millennials may become America's next great generation. They're coming into their mid-20s now, all the way through early 40s. And so far, research shows that they characterize themselves as religious and spiritual, though not necessarily Christian. And they resist any claim that any faith, whether it's Protestant, Catholic, Jew, Islam, any faith, is superior to another. They just resist that. Doctrine is important to them in that it serves to ground them in their faith. Again, part of their desire for structure. I think millennials, perhaps more than any other generation, are going to change the language of the church. When you grew up, when you were going to church, you probably either said, or your family either said, we're going to church, or we're going to service. Anybody remember that phrase? Going to service? Millennials, more so than anyone else, may be the ones who call worship, worship. Because they believe that the word service should be reserved for when the church leaves the building and become the visible hands and feet and heart of Christ in the communities that God has called them to. According to my information, we have 89 millennials on roll. That's about 14% of our roll. But about 25 of them are unknown. We can't find them. I can't find them yet. And I've been looking for 2 years. 19 of them are on the baptized roll. That's a pretty large number. So something stopped or was halted along the way compared to other generations. Here's the last generation. Generation Z. Anybody here born 1997 or yesterday? Please stand. Generation Z. These are the Zers. We have 1, 2, 3, 4. A few more. Probably some back in the nursery or children's church as well. Thank you. This is a formidable and a present force. Zers are actively shaping the present and the future. Numerically, they are the largest generation in America right now. They make up 26% of the population, over 90 million Zers. Okay? They account for 40% of all consumers. Zers don't simply influence American culture as any generation would. They will constitute American culture. And being and feeling connected locally and globally, sometimes this generation is referred to as the connected generation. But evidence also suggests that they also feel heartbreakingly alone. 9/11 is recent American history to Zers. If you talk about something that happened at the turn of the century, a Zer is going to ask which century. They know war by terrorism, not by tanks and guns. And terrorism's in full force. So Zers think a lot about death and stress at how possibly and quickly and unexpectedly the end of life may come, or the end of the American way of life. But what we've learned so far, at least from a demographic and a research standpoint, is that Zs are drawn in by Christ's great capacity to love and forgive. Encountering a God in Christ who has that kind of capacity to love and forgive and empower is very appealing to Generation Z. And they want a church that listens to their voices. They want a church that doesn't make assumptions about building relationships. Whatever form church takes with Generation Z, they want it to be the kind of a place where you will take time to get to know them and not make assumptions about them according to their background, their dress code, their nationality, their interests, their lifestyle choices. And they place a very high value on individuality. They will be quick to say that they don't all think the same. They don't all have the same values, and that includes faith, and that includes spirituality. And Zs will hang around long enough to see if they can connect, but they won't wait forever. A church that has a funeral service for the phrase, "Young people are the church of tomorrow," will be very attractive to Generation Z. And family is very important to Generation Z. But they will live in a society that has the most forms of family ever in American history. So being a church that accepts people and meets them where they are is golden to Zers. According to my information, we have 35 members from Generation Z. That's about 6%. And as you can imagine, 69 on our baptized roll, since many are children and youth. The oldest Zers, I think, are like 22. Let me close. We need to find a way to do this together because God loves all generations. His truth endures forever. His love endures forever with all generations. That's what we heard this morning. So right now, we have allowed these chairs to represent our two worship services. They're identical. They're the same. And right now, we have the expectation that all six generations will sit in either this chair or this chair. And right now, what's valuable and maybe perspectives. I want to find my word. Can't find my word. Right now, both services cater primarily to the mature generation and to baby boomers in terms of perspective, in terms of familiarities, in terms of traditions. Right now, five of the six generations are sitting in each chair when it comes to worship services. It's getting crowded. Now, I'm still learning. After 2 years of being here, I'm still learning whether or not worship is still the gate to the church for Generation X and for Millennials and for Generation Z. I don't know. I don't know what these are going to look like 2 years from now, or 5 or 10. I sometimes think that when I came here 2 years ago, maybe you thought that I came, knowing where I came from, that maybe I had an agenda, that I was going to change everything or eliminate something or what have you. But I want us, after this service, as generations, to discuss change in the context of worship today. Our services are doing pretty good at maintaining disciples. I don't know if we're doing so good making disciples. If we learn that worship is the gate for Generation X and for Millennials and for Generation Z, if we learn that Sunday morning is the preferred time, then my hope is that or one way would be to add a third service. Because sometimes I think the fear is that I want to eliminate those. I've not received a word from the Lord about eliminating anything. But I think it's part of Christian hospitality and welcoming that these two sort of scooch over and make room for a third. Elimination is not scooching. Scooching is scooching. It's moving over. It's making room for someone. It's part of hospitality. And again, I don't know. I'm just beginning after 2 years to get any kind of feedback from Generation X, Millennials, and Generation Z as to why they're absent or inactive or whatever word you want to fill in the blank with. We need to find ways to do this together. All together. Because the Lord loves all generations. And one of the questions that may come to us is, are we willing to scooch over and make room? In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, amen.